originating from our Jimmy John's of Lexington studios. This is Trainer Talk, presented by Fasig Tipton on the Horse Racing Radio Network.
But it was all for Chuck McGee. Super Sabre wins the Derby for Todd Fletcher.
Basalt will give trainer Steve Asmussen career win number 6,000.
It was all have another for Doug O'Neill.
Oxbow and D-Wayne Lucas. Trainer D-Wayne Lucas, a sixth win.
And Al's Rosie is going to give trainer Gary Contessa his 2,000th career win.
And Dialed In never got to them. It was Animal Kingdom for Graham Motion.
Steve Hobby with career victory number 1,000 at Oaklawn.
Now here's Mike Penna and Jude Feld.
Hello, everyone. Good afternoon, and welcome to the show Trainers Listen To, Trainer Talk, presented by Fasig Tipton, right here on the Horse Racing Radio Network. Mike Penna, Baron of the Backstretch, back with you again, alongside my usual entry mate. You know him as the Pontiff of the Pick Four, Jude Feld, and we are coming to you from our Jimmy John's of Lexington broadcast studios, right here in the heart of the Bluegrass, and happy to have you listening on Sirius 219 XM Channel 201, and of course, everyone tuning in worldwide on your streaming device, whatever it is, might be your computer, might be your mobile device, your tablet. We're happy to have you doing that at horseracingradio.net. And JT, here we go again. Once again, we spend an hour with a trainer who we have never had on this program before, which is kind of incredible considering we've been doing this show for, 5 or 6 years now. And we always find new people to talk to and people that have had a lot of success in the game. And here's another example tonight.
Yeah, he should be insulted.
It's not like he hasn't been winning greatest stakes races for years. Yeah.
I've been betting on him.
That's the cool thing about this show, though. It's run the gamut, right? From people that have trained one winner, maybe even
no
not
winners.
Even trained a winner, right? Just getting started, to other people who have trained, you know, like Bob Baffert, who have trained just tons of winners and won multiple greatest stakes races and a couple of triple crowns. But that's the cool thing about this show.
Yeah, no, it's an awesome show, and I love it when we have new people on that I've never met or talked to, because I'm like everybody else. I want to put the face with the name in the program.
Well, let's get to it. Excited to hear his story. Tonight's guest has trained 753 winners so far in his career, which is still going strong. Those runners have earned more than $23 million in purses, and he began that training career back in 1983 at Monmouth Park, and he currently is the trainer of Grade 2 Remsen winner Maximus Mischief, who is now on the road to the Kentucky Derby. And if you're wondering about that Kentucky Derby, it'll be here before we know it. The Derby now just 143 days away, and I'm sure nobody knows that better than our guest here tonight, who is Robert Reed Jr. You may know him better as Butch Reed, and he's with us here on Trainer Talk presented by Fasig Tipton. Butch, welcome.
It's good to talk to you, boys. Yep.
Yeah,
they
excited.
Finally found me after 35 years.
Hey, we had you on our radar from the beginning.
Yeah.
We just hope his voice holds up over the course of the next hour. He said that since winning the Remsen a couple of weeks ago, all he's done is talk, which is probably a good problem to have. So Butch, I hope the voice holds up.
Yeah, me too. Yeah, we're doing fine. So I rested it all morning.
You didn't have to yell at any exercise riders.
Well, congrats on the big win. What a spectacular effort that was.
Yeah, we lost really a lot on this time. You know, he was going from 7/8 of a mile all the way up to a mile and an eighth. First time around two turns and first time on the van. A lot of different variables. I had a lot of building excuses already for after the race. The things didn't go quite right, but fortunately, he came through like a trooper and handled it very well.
Yeah, everybody wants to talk about the Remsen, but you did a great job with him from day one. I mean, he's had a stellar career in three races. Talk about that a little bit.
Yeah, well, we picked him up out of the Timonium two-year-old training sale, the Fasig Tipton Mid-Atlantic. Chuck Zachney and I were there along with his son Alex, and his son Alex was actually the first one to lay eyes on him and said, "We got to come over and take a look at this colt." And we went over, and everything fell into place, and we got him for, I mean, it seems like a lot of money, but actually it was a pretty reasonable price for a in the Mischief colt who looked like him. And he was very precocious from day one. We brought him out of the sale and brought him directly to my barn here at Parks and never missed a day of training and just went right on with him. And we took our time with him a little bit and, made it a little bit of a late debut, but it worked out very well. And then we came back kind of quickly with his second start. He handled the first one so well. So his first two starts were only 3 weeks apart, which is rare for me. I like, you know, after the debut to give him a good 5-6 weeks, but let him digest that one. But he acted like he wanted to go on, so we weren't going to stand in his way. So, yeah, early in his career, he's been smart from day one and was not a problem training at any point. So,
Butch, what were some of the things that caught your eye when you first saw him at that Timonium sale?
Well, he was just an athlete. You know, he had the size. He was actually maybe a little bigger than I usually like him, you know, at that early age. But he was just light on his feet and very athletic. And, you know, for a horse's size to go down, I think he went 10-1 or something crazy like that. And, you know, I don't watch the times on those sales too closely as I do the, you know, how they do it and the fluidity of stride and, you know, do it with seeming ease. And he was just, you know, he's obviously an athlete from day one. So,
yeah, it's so important to have those kind of horses that do everything effortlessly, and then if they're smart on top of it, you mentioned how smart he is. I mean, that's what you want, right?
Absolutely. You know, I think that's how he got the mile and eighth. I mean, if anybody, I know you guys hadn't, but anybody had seen him his first, he is a 2-year-old colt, and he's big and strong, and he was a real handful in his first two starts here in Philly, so I was more a little nervous about that, taking him up to New York, and that aqueduct paddock is kind of like a pit up there, so I wasn't real sure how he was going to react, but he was just cool and confident and just stood there and, you know, was ready to go and looked at me and said, I'm ready for the sports, let's do it. And, you know, and that's what I think, you know, he hadn't really had any competition around him in his first two starts. He, you know, broke very sharply both times and was a couple lengths in front before they had gone 50 yards. So the other part I really liked about the New York race, he had horses inside and outside, and Frankie said he was just twitching his ears back and forth, just, you know, not worried about it at all. So, I mean, we were a lot more worried about it than he was.
Yeah, his jockey, Frankie Pennington, joined us this past Saturday on our Equine Forum program, Butch, and he talked about working another horse for you before he ever got on Maximus Mischief when Maximus was still waiting to make his debut. And he said the other horse worked like a freak, and you told him, hey, I want you to try Maximus. I think you'll like this horse. I'm really high on him. And he said that he outworked the other horse quite easily.
Yeah, the other horse is a solid little horse. Unfortunately, he came along in a bad year this year, so he ended up being Maximus's kind of workmate for a couple starts there. So, but that horse already won a couple races in his stakes place the other day. He's a quality horse in his own right, but Maximus is just on a little bit different level there. So, yeah, we worked them together and a couple of times, and Frankie's eyes, the first time he came back, his eyes were big as saucers, and the one thing he told his agent was, don't mess this up. So his agent has been very attentive. So,
yeah, I would imagine so.
A couple times, yeah, so.
I was teasing Frankie a little bit because I say, you know, you ride a big winner for a barn, and they always tell you, yeah, we got one that's better than him back at the barn, and that's never the case, but this time it actually was the case.
Yeah, it actually came true. Yeah. So, yeah, he was, you know, from day one, he's been breezing very, very well. And unfortunately, some of the other horses in the barn, they had to feel the brunt of his ability a couple times, so we got to where he breezing them at older horses and allowance quality, whereas it was whoever was doing the short stall had to go out and breeze against him. So they were all ducking that duty, but somebody had to do it.
Do you find when you have a horse like that, it kind of like lifts all the other horses up?
Well, I know it lifts the help up for sure, and everybody shows up to work on time, and everybody's on their toes and bright and shiny every morning. And, you know, it does seem to be momentum. I've never been able to, I guess, quantify that or put my finger on why that is, but the barn, when somebody lifts the barn up, the whole rest of the barn seems to fall in a step. And we've had a very good year with all the horses, not just Maximus. So, I just think it's inertia or whatever it is that gets them all going. But they are all running very well right now.
But you mentioned the paddock in the pre-race being a concern with Maximus Mischief. But as you said, he handled it with flying colors. Is there anything as a trainer that you can do in the week or the couple of weeks leading up to a race to get a horse more comfortable when they enter a paddock, especially if it's a horse like that can get a little keyed up?
Well, there's not a ton you can do. We've actually learned, just through trial and error, more or less, We had guys on both sides of his head coming to the paddock in his first two starts, and he seemed like he fought it more than anything else. You know, he was resentful of it. So having a guy on his offside, so we eliminated that. But when you ship, you know, you can do all the schooling you want here, but when you ship, there's no way to really see the place. We shipped up the morning of the race. So, you know, there's not a whole lot of schooling you can do. So you just got to take him over there and hope for the best. And fortunately, he came through it fine in college. But, and also with that said, this is a horse we've trained very hard. I trained him very hard for that spot because, you know, it was a race that I had kind of, or we had kind of picked out, you know, from a month out. So he's a horse who has big, strong gallops every day, mile and a half to, you know, mile and three quarters every day. And even the amazing part is, first time around, he's fine, but second time he turns for home and switches lead, he really takes a hold of the rider, and he's holding on for dear life because he knows that's where he somehow he figured out on his own that's where the money is, that second time you turn for home. And he had done it every day, and he did it in a race the other day. So he's just, like I said, he's a smart horse. He knows where he is on the racetrack and where the time to go is.
Yeah, it was interesting to me that a lot of people were questioning his ability to get the distance, but the way he runs, it just seems like he could probably go as far as they write races.
Oh, I think so, yeah. I mean, it's just mentally and economy of stride. He doesn't worry about anything. He's a very confident horse. And as I said, he's just an athlete. He's a big horse with a big, long stride. I'd like to measure someday, but he does it very economically. There's no wasted energy. He did get out a little bit in one start, but that was just, you know, greenness and, you know, part of the learning process. So, you know, he's, I don't see any limits to the distance he can get. Yet I've read that a couple of times where, well, there's a question of, can he get the distance? But the mischiefs I've seen have all been able to get long. I guess it's the song and the prayer on the mother's side people were a little worried about, but I was never worried about it. I think he's a natural route horse. So,
Butch Reed Jr., our special guest on Trainer Talk, presented by Fasig Tipton here on the Horse Racing Radio Network. Butch, what's next? You'll send him to Florida and have that prep race campaign in South Florida for him. What's the key? What are you looking to do there?
Well, now that I think we're a little bit ahead of the curve. That was one of the advantages of taking a shot in the rail race like the Remsen. We've already been a mile and an eighth, and I don't think there's too many 2-year-olds in the country that have been a mile and an eighth around two turns. So we're definitely not going to back up and go around one turn. So his next race will be, you know, one of the preps. We haven't really put our finger on it just yet. He is leaving for Florida on Sunday morning, and we'll be down there Monday morning, and then we'll start his preparation from there. But I believe the first race down there is February the 2nd, the Holy Bull, something like that. So that seems like one that's in good line, and it's around two turns, which is really what we did. Now that we've got him around two turns, he's not going back to one turn anymore, so.
You mentioned before you came on the air that your wife had already headed down to Florida and done some reconnaissance on places to stay. Does she work with you, Butch?
Yeah. That's my wife, Virginia, my assistant. She rode horses. She exercised all my horses for a long time, and she's not riding anymore. Too many injuries and too many broken bones for that anymore. So, yeah, she's my assistant. She'll be handling the Florida sprint. It's not really a sprint, but we'll have 3 or 4 down there this year. And see, we've been going down there for off and on for 25 years or so. So we're pretty familiar with the territory. And they've been nice enough to give us some stalls right at Gulfstream Park. I've tried the training center route a couple of times, and it hasn't worked that well. So I guess I'm just a racetrack trainer. So we'll be going right to Gulfstream. And we're familiar with the area. My daughter's actually down there with her now. She's trying to find a nice barn for us and then find some accommodations for the humans in the entourage also.
Yeah, you gotta take care of everybody. It's tough when you have to split your stable, but this year it's going to be an exception with a horse like that. And imagine Florida was very happy to give you stalls.
Yeah, I was actually a little late. I didn't realize the stall after doing sometime in September before Maximus had even debuts. But we gave him a call, and and Chris K. Mack, who I've known for years, and Billy Badgett, I know the whole crew down there. So they were nice enough to help us out and get us a couple spots down there. So at least we could do is get in some of their big races, and hopefully we can pay them back that way.
So. Yeah, well said. Butch Reed Jr. here on Trainer Talk, presented by Fasic Tipton. Butch, earlier you mentioned the name Chuck Zackney, who is the managing partner of Cash's King Stable, the owners of Maximus Mischief. You've had a great relationship with them for a very long time. You've had a lot of success together. Talk a little bit about that.
Yeah, actually, I had been kicking around for a while. We were down in Fairhill, Maryland. My daughter was Whitney was getting into high school, so you know the nomadic life of a journeyman horse trainers, you know, about as consistent as being in the carnival, I think. My daughter had been in eight different schools by the time she was in eighth grade, so we were looking for a spot to settle down, and we were in Fairhill, Maryland. And that didn't quite work out so well. So with the advent of slots here at Parks and word that the purses were going to go way up, we came up to Parks. And the first year here, Chuck was just coming off his triple gown try with Fleet Alex, and he's a Philadelphia guy, and was looking to expand into the Parks market. And my brother Mark had a previous relationship with him. And he interviewed me, and we went up and had lunch together. We talked about some things, and he said, "Okay, well, here's what I'm going to do. I'm going to put $50,000." Him and his buddies, Joe Judge and Joe Lero, were the partners on it at the time. And he said, "I'm going to put $50,000 in there and go ahead and claim a couple horses and see if we can't get something started." And the first horse I claimed for him for $25,000 was a filly named Miss Blue Tie Dye, and I believe she ended up winning 7 stakes and about $650,000 or $700,000. So we had good luck right from the beginning. So it was very nice. And then I started getting a few of the Fleet Alex babies, and we had some success with them along the way, including a Fleet again, who was, you know, a very nice horse. He actually ended up selling him, and right after that we won the Breeders' Cup Marathon with him right down there at Churchill Downs. So I have a good record in Kentucky already. I think I'm 1-for-2, so hitting close to 500 in Kentucky.
That's good. And, that's, always want to be on top when you go into the Derby.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah. That's great. We got good stats down there, yeah.
That horse ran so well in that marathon that day. We were there. We were providing the coverage here on the network, and he just ran so, so well. What do you remember about that day when you think back on it?
Well, it was just a crazy the whole experience was crazy because my daughter later on was attending Wellesley College up in Boston. We were kind of didn't even make the decision to go to the race until almost, you know, the day of entry, which I believe was Monday for Saturday or something like that. And I was up in Boston watching her play field hockey. And the game got snowed out up there for some reason. So it got delayed till the next day. And in the meantime, we were making the decision to send a horse. So I was in Boston. I had to go find a men's store, a big man's men's store, to get a suit. Flew from Boston straight down to Kentucky to meet the horse. And then my wife had to drive from Boston all the way to Churchill Downs. We had the car down there a couple of days later. And it was just a great time. And the people of Kentucky were so nice to us. This is my first time I've actually never been to Churchill Downs. So it was a real exciting time. And, of course, the horse jumped up and ran giant like that. So it was always a fond memory. And it was really fun for the family, too, to be able to get down there and have that kind of success.
Yeah, that's really cool. You know, Fleet Alex was such a good horse, and he's such a cool horse now. When I go out to Gainesway, that's who I always want to see. Everybody, of course, wants to see Tappet, who stands out there, but I go hang out with a Fleet Alex. I keep threatening that I'm gonna take a couple sandwiches over there and just have lunch with him. He's the greatest horse to be around. I just really enjoy him. He's very smart. He's clever and such a calm animal. He's really cool.
Yeah, well, that's the way his son was. That's the way a Fleet Again was, and a lot of his sons were. They weren't that quick coming around. Usually, you got to give them a race or two. But that third or fourth race, they catch on, and they got, like you said, they have good heads on their shoulders. They're nice and relaxed. That's how a horse like a Fleet Again was able to get them out in 3/4. He never worried about anything, so there was no distance that was too long for him. And a lot of his babies are that way, too. They're all big, strong horses that have very good stamina.
Yeah, I know that you've won other major greatest stakes races, but let's face it, Butch, there is the Kentucky Derby, and then maybe if you look at it, you've got the other Triple Crown races, and then there's the Breeders' Cup, and there's something special about those particular events for whatever reason. I guess maybe the stature of those events, but when your horse crosses the finish line first to win a Breeders' Cup race, can you put into words what that's like?
Not really. Actually, with the whole thing, I wanted to go bet on him, but I got swept out with the crowd, so I couldn't really get back to the windows, and I ended up climbing up on top of a thing of some kind of a stanchion by the winner's circle down there just so I could see the race. And then there's a very good video of my owners up in the box where they're kind of watching it, and if you get a chance, you should Google it, because it's a video of them in the box. But somebody had the presence to keep the tape rolling, and it's just an amazing thing. Anybody who wanted to get into horse racing and see what it's like to be an owner of a racehorse in a race like that, it should watch that video, because it's really amazing just how excited the whole group was. And of course, we were going nuts, because a mile, three quarters, and with the way the infield is at Churchill, where there's a lot of different debris there in the middle, so you can't really see it. And he was so covered in mud, you can hardly tell he was gray anymore. But there he came down the middle of the racetrack, and it was quite a thrill, that's for sure.
Yeah, there's nothing like it. It's amazing, and that was a cool day. We always enjoy doing the Breeders' Cup, and now it's 2 days of great racing. It's just one of those events where people lose track of their sensibilities sometimes.
Absolutely, yeah. I mean, that's living the fantasy right there. That's what the sport is all about. There is the need for our daily overnight races and stuff like that. But to point for those races, it takes months of, kind of like what we're doing with this horse, take months of planning, and so much has to go right. And then when it does happen, where everything falls into place and it does go right, it's just an amazing feeling. So, I'm certainly like to try and experience it again.
Yeah, do you let yourself think that far ahead with a horse like Maximus Mischief Butch and think about what it might be like making that walk over and saddling him and hearing that my old Kentucky home as he comes out underneath the twin spires?
Well, no, I try and downplay that, because I don't know if I don't want to think or what, but every time somebody brings it up, I'm just like, okay, well, I'm pointing for a race and then, 2 months from now that I'm plenty worried about. If that happens, it'll be great when it does, but I try and keep it on. I'm sure it's there in the back of my mind, and I try not to allow it to come to the forefront, because I have a job of making decisions, making 1,000 decisions between now and then that we have to get everyone right. So I try not to go there, but my mind does drift to it every once in a while.
Are you superstitious?
A little bit. We try and do everything the same way, and I got the same tie that I'll be wearing and things like that. But beyond that, not too heavily. I think hard work is you make your own luck, I've always felt. So you make the right decisions and turn everything right, and then luck will kind of come your way. So,
tie did you have on when he won the Remsen?
No, it was actually my daughter, the tie we had for my daughter's wedding. So that's my lucky one. The one they gave me, that's the one that makes all the big events. So I'm sure I'll be there at Churchill Downs. Yep.
That's really cool. Do you have a general plan of what races you're pointing for, or are you going to just take it one race at a time?
Well, he's going to tell us, but the first one we're really got our eye on is the Holy Bull, I would guess, because, the timing is right for that. We still got to get him down there and make sure everything's good. And then we'll, after the Holy Bull, we'll decide whether we need, the Holy Bull in the Florida Derby, possibly. Could be it. We may just have two starts, but if we decide we need another one, the Fountain of Youth is there also. So somewhere between two and three of those two, I would guess. So,
Butch Reed Jr. is our special guest here on Trainer Talk, presented by Fasig Tipton. You heard him talk about Maximus Mischief, the Remsen winner, who is a graduate of a Fasig Tipton sale. He liked the look of him when he saw him. He likes the look of him even more now that he's 3-for-3 and a Grade 2 winner. And we'll see if he can continue on that road to the Kentucky Derby as he heads to Florida. Butch, you said you'll head down there this weekend. Is that the plan?
Yeah, I'm going to be driving down. The horses will be leaving Sunday morning, and then I'll be right behind. I'm going to make sure they're loaded here, and then I'll be jumping in my car and going down there, so we have a car down there. I'll be down there by this weekend, make sure he gets settled in and then begun training, And then I'll be, you know, most of the season I'll be back and forth between, I'll still have 25 or so horses here. So I'll be back and forth between the two outfits, spending most of my time, of course, with him down there. So, but my wife is, you know, a consummate horsewoman. She's been around for longer than I have. She was actually one of the hot walkers for Secretariat. She worked for Lucien Lauren back in the day. So she's got plenty of experience and knows what she's looking at with a resource. So I'm confident with in her hands. And I got a good assistant up here at the parks also. So it makes it me a bit, you know, be able to split my time a little bit and not have to worry too much. But on the whole, I'll be keeping a close eye on Max down there, I'm sure.
Has she told you many stories about being around Big Red?
No, yeah, a little bit. I mean, she was green. That was her first job. She's actually from the Saratoga area and was working as a waitress. And she loves to tell the story up on the lake in Saratoga. And a bunch of the jocks used to come in there and hang out, and a bunch of the racetrackers. And Saratoga ended, and she had made a friend of someone there, and they said, well, come on down to Belmont. We're heading back to Belmont. She hooked on with Lucien Lauren and went down to Belmont, and she's been with the racetrack ever since. So I met her in about 80 or 82, somewhere around there, and we've been together ever since. So we've been a lot of miles, and we've got one beautiful daughter named Whitney, who's now a doctor down at the Children's Hospital of Pennsylvania. So we've done some right things along the way, and it's not an easy life to have a family, you know, picking up and moving every several months. So the fact that she came through with Fineman Colors is a testament to my wife. You know, just did a great job with her and done a great job with the horses all the way along. So I've always said she's the best horse I got in the barn. So, yeah, she does a great job. So.
She must be totally charming. Everybody that meets her wants to take her along, and they never let her go. That's great.
How'd you like to have that for your first job, right, to be around Secretariat?
Yeah, that would be intimidating.
Yeah, she said she rode on a van with him then when they went down to Laurel and went to Laurel for charity. So
that's
with
great.
Eddie Sweat and the whole crew. Yeah, I mean, it probably didn't mean anything to her. She didn't know horses from whatever. It was her first job. So she got that trial by fire, and she worked with Jimmy Krogh, got on Holy Bull's mother, as a matter of fact, and worked for Eddie I've got him lost his name. Anyway. But anyway, he had the first Breeders' Cup Sprint winner, Elio, for Buddy Lepman. So she's been around and not a lot of nice horses throughout her career, too. So.
That's good. She's got Derby experience.
Yep. There you go. Yeah.
Well, Butch, we're going to...
You can show me around when we get down there.
Yeah, that's right.
Absolutely. Butch, stay with us. We're going to get to a short commercial break. When we come back, we'll continue this conversation. We'll actually go back and look at how Butch first got involved in horse racing, where that love of racing began for him. That's all ahead when we come back. It's Trainer Talk, presented by Fasig Tipton on the Horse Racing Radio Network.
Nominate now to the 2019 Fasig Tipton Gulfstream Selected 2-Year-Old and Training Sale. The Gulfstream Sale was the number one ranked 2-year-old sale in 2018 by ROR on pinhooks and percentage of profitable pinhooks, with an average of more than $385,000 and a median of $295,000. And more horses sold for $1 million or more than any other 2-year-old sale in America last year. It's the Fasig Tipton Gulfstream Sale, March 27th, 2019. Nominate now at FasigTipton.com.
Bloom Racing.
Sky Diamonds takes the lead. Sky Diamonds to win, going away.
Started by former jockey and 35-year racing industry veteran Jeffrey Bloom, Bloom Racing offers racing partnerships, bloodstock services, pinhooking, and private race management.
Midnight Bizou with another assertive final furlong. The top filly of the meet deservedly wins the Grade 1 Santa Anita Oaks.
Experience the fun, excitement, and exclusive access of racehorse ownership with Bloom Racing. Forming racing partnerships now. Get in on the action at bloomracing.com.
It all started with a dream. A dream to be the best. To breed the best. To race the best.
Super Saver Rosa Mayan, what a finish to the class.
And to stand the best. Windstar Farm. Dedicated to the dream.
The This is Trainer Talk, presented by Fasig Tipton on the Horse Racing Radio Network.
They're a quarter of a mile from home. Maximus Mischief. Tax is putting the heat on at the top of the stretch. Maximus Mischief is asked to run now. Gets a reminder and opens up a length. Tax is second. Five back to Network Effect in third, followed by Bourbon War. They're coming to the 16th pole, and it's Maximus Mischief proving he's the real deal as he opens up late. A belated rally from Network Effect. Maximus Mischief wins the Remsen. Network Effect found his best stride late to finish second. Then it was Tax and Bourbon War.
Welcome back to Trainer Talk, presented by Fasig Tipton here on HRRN. Mike Penna, Jude Feld in our Jimmy Johns of Lexington broadcast studios, visiting with trainer Robert Reed Jr. You probably know him better as Butch Reed Jr. And that was Frank Miramati with the call of the Grade 2 Remsen Stakes at Aqueduct a couple of weeks ago. Maximus Mischief, we've talked about him in the first half of the show. He is now on the road to the Kentucky Derby. He'll take the Florida route for Butch Reed, and we'll see if he can continue moving forward as he moves into that three-year-old campaign. Should be a lot of fun to watch, and he's a very, very talented runner. If you missed any portion of this show, well, all you have to do is head back to our website, horseracingradio.net. You can check out a podcast of this show and all of our Trainer Talk shows. They're all there for you every single week at horseracingradio.net and Horse Racing Radio Network on iTunes. Well, Butch, that is just one of several graded stakes victories in your career. Your first coming back in 1990. I mentioned at the top of the show, you began your training career at Monmouth Park, but your first graded stakes win would come in the Lamplighter Handicap, that grade three, with a horse by the name of Groscar. Tell me a little bit about that day.
I was kind of kicking around, didn't have a whole lot going on. I think we had three or four horses and not too much happening. And Joe Pierce had one of my friends from Monmouth had a owner named Sidney Bear, who had been around a little bit up there and had a good string of horses, and Joe recommended me. And I picked up the horses for Mr. Bear. It was 18 horses. It was my real first chance to have a fair-sized string. And in that group was a Jersey bred named Groscar, who was by Carnival A. He was a homebred of Mr. Bear's, and he was a very hard horse to deal with. And and that was my first time out here. I think I'd run in maybe some grade six before then, but really never had much success. And I just remember the night before, because I knew I had a good chance. The horse was okay on the dirt, and then one morning we breezed him on the turf there at Monmouth. We used to be able to breeze on the turf. And the clockers looked at his watch and looked at me and said, "What the heck was that?" And then we ran him in the Lamplighter a week or so later, and he just turned into a great, great performance. And he was, I think he still held the record for a while, but I think he won like five stake races at one Monmouth Park meeting, and including two graded stakes. So I was very fortunate to pick up the horse for Mr. Bear, and had our first really big year in the sport was that year. So.
Yeah, it only takes one to get you on the map like that, and once you do, then it seems like it's easier for people to hire you, you know. And sometimes for some trainers, it takes a long, long time before they get to that point. Is it just luck, or is it self promotion, or how does that work?
I'm not really sure. I wouldn't have been kicking around that long. if there was a magic formula, I never did know what it was. But just being around and knowing the right people, and when you get your chance, you got to take full advantage of it. And that's what we were fortunate enough to do. And I think it was luck, because that was the year my wife was pregnant with my daughter also. So you say your luck's really good when we got a new one coming into the family. So. That's when things really got started. But actually, that was the Valks of the first year that I went to Gulfstream Park. And I got down there, and my first really big-time move down there. And we were right, nobody could believe we were right in the middle of Millionaire's Row there. On one side of me was Shook McGee's horses. And on the back side of my barn was Neil Howard with Will Farish's horses. And the next barn over was Rusty Arnold and Sonny Hines. And that was our first indoctrination to be in the middle of that, and Shook had an unbelievable outfit at that time. And then we actually, uh, so So we were down there. My daughter had just been born. She was, you know, 5 months old or something like that. And we had just, you know, I think shelled out a huge amount of money for a place down there for the meet. And we were training along and getting excited for the meet. And the first horse I ran was Gross Car. I believe the race was called the Fort Lauderdale or something in the first week of Gulfstream. And unfortunately, it had rain and the race came off the turf. And we decided to run him anyway, and he unfortunately bowed a tendon in that race. So the ups and downs of the sports. At one point, I had like 21 horses, the whole side of a barn of Gulfstream. I came in the next morning, and I had 3 horses and 18 empty stalls. So an example of the ups and downs of the sport. Yeah, Mr. Bear had decided to move on to somebody else. So we were in Gulfstream with a 6-month-old baby with 3 horses and 18 empty stalls. So that was the part you realize you never get too high on yourself or too low. You got to keep an even keel and keep on trucking on. So,
well, it's so true. And Butch, this is a game that we talk about this a lot, where it's the highest highs and the lowest lows, and you have to kind of, you have to ride with it. How do you do that, especially in that situation that you were facing at that point? How do you deal with those lows?
Well, you know, you have to be, you know, it's not a, the expression used to be, it's not a game for guys in short pants. You have to, Keep an even keel, and you know, don't worry about the lows too much, and certainly don't get too high when things are going very well. So you have to keep an even keel, keep your head down, and keep on digging. That's about all you can do.
And that's another thing that makes it so difficult, is that you have to have that equilibrium or you'll go crazy. So when you do go on a winning streak, it's like you really can't enjoy it, you know? I mean, Shay Knight, I don't know if you ever met Shay Knight, but he was a trainer in California for many years, and he used to say if you win a race, you should be able to rent the winner's circle and have a party in it because of all the things you've had to overcome to get that picture, and you're in the winner's circle for about 35 seconds and it's all over with. And I thought that was really a good observation, because it's so hard to get there, and then you're there, they take the picture, and you're back out again. They're waiting for the next one to come up, you know?
Exactly right. And, you know, you're only really as good as you were that day. Nobody remembers the next day, so you got to work just as hard and get back out there and get the next one ready. So it is so hard to win a race that, you know, you can enjoy it for about as long as you are in that winner's circle, but, you know, you never know where the next one's coming from, so you got to get right back at it and, you know, enjoy it for the short time that you can, but never get too high, that's for sure, because this sport has a way of leveling things off, and it always does. That's the only guarantee. That's the only thing that's consistent in this sport, is you know that it'll level off. They'll get even with you at some point.
So what did you do at that point, Butch? How did you build things back up?
Well, it was a very gradual process. I mean, it took a long time. In fact, I'm still trying to get over it now. 18 years ago. No, but it was a gradual process. You know, just kept digging. We got the horses that we had there, got them to win, and then we attracted a couple other clients. And then my next big guy was a guy named Mort Gitlin of 3G Stables down at he was a longtime Calder guy and ran a bunch of horses in the Florida Stallion Series. And I was fortunate enough through a connection to make a connection with him, and we picked up a couple of horses, same deal, like a 10 or 12 horse outfit. And in that group, we were fortunate enough to have picked up a horse named Majestic Sweep. And Majestic Sweep, he was, I think it was about a $30,000 claimer at the time. And we got him turned around, and he ran second in the Tropical Park Derby. And then he came up to Jersey, where my home at the old Garden State, and got beat a nose in the Jersey Derby. And then we took him out to Ohio, and he won the Ohio Derby and was one of the choices in the coming into the Haskell. I think he was second or third choice in there, and fortunately got injured training up to the race. But, you know, I've been lucky. We've been able to attract some good guys every time we seem to get down. And so I remember my wife and I hugging and crying as the horses walked out of the barn a couple of times. But as I said, you can't get too low. You got to keep scrapping. So.
Yeah, and it's great that you have somebody like your wife who is in tune with the business, and she understands that this is all part of it, because you've done this together now for so long. That's so important, too, to have somebody by your side that can understand this game and the highs and the lows, isn't it, Butch?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, I'd hate to have to, you know, come home from the barn and try and explain it to somebody who hadn't been around the horses, because I don't know how you would, you know.
Yep.
Because anybody else would say, what the heck are you doing? And I've even thought about it. You know, I have a business degree from the University of Maryland, and I've thought about a couple times about what else I could do. But fortunately, always made the right decision to stick with it. And then the last few years have really paid off pretty well. So it's worked out really great for us. And as you said, you know, it's easier, much easier to explain if you have a wife who's in the business with you.
No, oh, yeah, there's no question about that. I'll vouch for that. It's one of those things where it's such a different business. And since you have a business degree, you know what a business is supposed to be run like, but you can't run a racing stable like a business. I mean, you can use business precepts to a certain degree, but it's such a unique operation. Can you address that?
Yeah. I mean, there's a few, believe me, when I told my mother, she paid for my education that I was going to be a horse trainer. She wasn't too happy about that. But, you know, besides basic accounting principles, this is absolutely a unique business, you know, and it's without experience, and you can't explain it to anybody. And there's no handbook that tells you how to do it. It's a matter of experience. It's all you have to do it. And, you know, I was fortunate enough to be around some very high level trainers. We always traveled in good company with Jimmy Kroll was my barn mate for a while, and Sonny Hine, Liam and him. And then I got to know some of the guys from Kentucky down there at Gulfstream. So you kind of absorb what you can. You watch a guy like Alan Jerkins and stuff like that train a horse. And you ever tried to do it like him, you probably you couldn't. So you picked up the pieces where you could from everybody and incorporate that into your own business model, and that's how you move forward.
So you make the decision to become a horse trainer after getting that business degree. Let's go back a little bit further, Butch. Do you remember the first time that you were actually bit by the horse racing bug and fell in love with the sport?
Oh, absolutely. Well, it was actually my big brother, Mark. I had kind of followed him a little bit. We both had graduated from the University of Maryland, and that's where we got the bug. He started working for Dickie Tutrow over at Laurel and Bowie, and I was, 4 or 5 years behind him, so I kind of did the same thing where I went over and rubbed horses in the morning and sometimes made it back for classes in the afternoon, but not usually. I was usually stayed for the races. But, we both worked for Dick Tutrow starting down there. And then my brother by then had come up here to Philadelphia. Well, I was Keystone at the time and was a leading trainer here. And I actually, after graduating from college, went to work for Playboy Hotel and Casino in Atlantic City and was working in the guest services department down there. And my brother Mark needed somebody to go. He was going to the old Kennington sales down in Kentucky, which no longer exists, and he wanted somebody to fly down with him because he's afraid to fly. So I went down and I said there was a horse in there because it was an Oregon bred, and the sire was Jim, who I never even heard of, but we bought him for a couple of $1,000. And ended up bringing him up here to Parks. I bought him in partnership with my mother, and Mark trained him up here at Parks Horse. And he won 3 out of his first 6 with 3 seconds, including the little, Triple Crown Trail they used to have through here. But, there were $25,000 stakes at the time. And he was second in a couple of them. And from then on, it was over. And, I knew what I wanted to do. And I was, I think I lasted about another year down there at the casino. And then Mark was looking for – he was looking to expand his operation to Monmouth Park, and he was looking for somebody to take a small string over there. So that's when I first went in. I went to Monmouth as his assistant with a string of about 8 to 10 horses and, fell in love with it there. And it's 35 years later, we're still here. So,
what did your mom think of your brother Mark becoming a horse trainer before you did it?
Well, they had exactly her father, who was a South Philadelphia guy, and the old Garden State Park, that's where we were born and raised, just outside of Philadelphia, about, 10 minutes from Center City, Philadelphia. And her father was a racetracker, and he was the first one. We stuck in the Garden State when we were underage. He was the first one to take us over there, so she wasn't too happy with her father for taking us over there. And Mark was the first one to get bitten, and she wasn't real happy about that. And he was actually already married and had a kid when he decided to go start training horses. So against everybody's better wishes, he did it. And that's kind of what got the family going.
It's amazing. They actually had an intervention for me. My mom, one of her friends from high school, was married to this high-powered grocery store president, and they took me out to dinner and said, "You can't train horses. You've got to get a job." And the grocery store guy offered me a job, and I said, "No, I'm going to train horses." I was not a popular fellow.
Yeah, I remember Mark. You know, he was just out of college, so he was still the wrote and fancied up his resume and sent it to, I think, Elliot Birch and about three or four different guys trying to get a job. And all except for Dickie Jutso wrote him back, "You don't want to do that. You know, the sport is not in good shape right now. You might want to think about something else to do with your career." But Dickie Jutso was the only one that said, "Sure, come on." And that's where he started with him. So.
Well, it's a great story. And Mark has had a tremendous amount of success, too. I talked about you winning more than 730 races now. Well, Mark's won over 1,700 races. His runners have earned over $18 million. So he's had a ton of success, too. And you think back to some of his good horses. I guess the name Mr. Nickerson is the first one that pops into your head. Do you remember Mr. Nickerson when he had him and winning all those big races?
No, absolutely. Yeah, that was his. That was actually for Bob Nixon. It was a guy that was making the soap operas. Was the producer, I guess, for a lot of soap operas. He's still that are still on TV today. But I was actually I had a small string. Mr. Nickerson was over here. Mark was a leading trainer here. Well, it was Keystone at the time, but now Parks. Held the record here for most wins for probably 20 years until Scott Lake just broke it recently, 5 or 6 years ago, I believe. And Mark started frequenting the sales, and and he came up with Mr. Nickerson, who was one of the top. You know, he was running I think he won the Bay Shore and was moving along the Triple Crown Trail early on, but then he came to be basically a sprinter and won some top races, and that was very exciting. So. Ran in the Breeders' Cup several times, and I was actually down at Gulfstream when he came down to run in the Breeders' Cup sprint down there. So that was the for our family, the first real taste of the top level stuff. So it was very exciting, and Mark was the pioneer for the area on those kind of things.
That was a great Breeders' Cup too, the one at Gulfstream.
Yeah, and that was it was the first time I had been down. Actually, we weren't there. I think I just went down for that Breeders' Cup, and it was just a sensational time, and that's when that really consolidated for me what I wanted to do with my career. So it was fantastic, yep.
How much time will you and Mark spend kind of talking about racing and maybe some philosophies and things like that? Do you do that much?
Well, actually, not a whole lot. He said, "Here's 8 horses. You know, go up the mountain to figure it out." Is basically what he said. But no, we talked about. You know, we went over. We had been, going over horses, going over. He was basically a claiming operation in the beginning when I first came on board. So, looking at a lot of different claimers and clocking horses in the paddock, and all the basic strategy kind of stuff. But in this sport, there's only so much time, or you can really take time to. Sit down with somebody, brother or no brother, you've got to get in there and experience it and, do it on your own and feel the pressure and make the decisions, which is probably the hardest part of this whole thing. Nobody can really make the decisions for you. It's up to you. You got to call your shot and then live with the results. So it's all experience in this sport. But what Mark did, the best thing he did was he afforded me the opportunity to see a lot of different horses and, get a feel for a lot of different things. So that was the biggest part of his contribution to my career, I think.
Visiting with trainer Butch Reed Jr. here on Trainer Talk, presented by Fasig Tipton, and you're listening to the Horse Racing Radio Network. Don't forget, if you miss any portion of the show, head over to our website, horseracingradio.net, and you can listen to the podcast at your leisure. Take me back to 2012, Butch, in that one particular race at Saratoga, the A.G. Vanderbilt. It's a grade one. Your horse was victorious. His name was Poseidon's Warrior. Put me in your shoes that day. What was that like?
That was great. It was a muddy day. He was actually a horse that we had also I had bought for Chuck Zackney out of the Timonium 2-year-old sale, the same sale as we got the Maximus out of. And it was all very, a good horse from the beginning. He won that $200,000 stake as a 2-year-old at Monmouth Park. And Chuck had actually sold him to another client of mine, Tom McGrath. And he was kicking around. He won 5 or 6 stakes. And we were trying to decide on which where we wanted to go with him. And we were deciding between the Vanderbilt and I think it was a $100,000 stake that used to run at Monmouth Park. and track him up sloppy, and it looked like a magical field, and he was a very, very nice horse, so we decided to take a shot in the Vanderbilt. And actually, Tom had flown in. Tom likes to run late for these races. He had flown in private to get to Saratoga, and the horses were already saddled and on the racetrack. And he came running in, and he said, "Hey, I want to bet $1,000 on this horse." I said, "Tom, you already got, I think the pot was $400,000 or whatever it was, and a grade one." I said, "You got enough on the line. You don't need to." I think the horse was 45-1 or something along those lines. I said, "Why are you going to do that? You don't need a bet. We're kind of taking a shot here. It's a tough, very, very tough race." I think Shackleford, the Preakness winner, was in there, and there was four or five other top horses in there. So, needless to say, I talk him out of going to bet the $1,000 to win on the horse. And so we're in the front of the grandstand, and here he comes, just gutting it out, and got the money. And, of course, he paid $83, I believe.
It's $74.50.
Still brings it up all this time later. So
yeah, $74.50. So don't feel quite that bad. It wasn't $83. You didn't cost him that much.
It's a good thing there were no empty stalls the next morning.
Yeah. He still brings that up to this day. Believe me, I'll see him. We've got a horse running today. I'll see him this afternoon. He might bring it up then. So he won't let that one go away.
But you know who he beat that day? You know, you mentioned the name Shackleford, and believe it or not, Shackleford was actually last in the AG Vanderbilt that day. He just got used up on the front end and faded. Justin Phillip was the horse that was second, and Poseidon's Warrior beat him by a neck. So it was a thrilling finish that day. Kieran had MC in there, that horse for Godolphin that was really, really good. You had Jersey Town who was in there. So it was a quality group of sprinters, and Poseidon's Warrior, the second longest shot on the board, proving best at 36-1. Pretty cool, Butch.
Yeah, he was a really cool horse, too. He wasn't the biggest horse, or even the fastest horse for that matter, but he was the hardest trying horse I maybe ever had. I hope, if Maximus, tried half his horses, tries half as hard as that horse did, he's going to have a long and productive career. But and now we have the pleasure of training a bunch of Poseidon Warriors babies. So I've got four of them or so in the barn, and a couple of them look like they're really all right. I won some stakes with a horse named Navy Commander this year, who I had the pleasure of training both his mother and his father. So it's really fun to see the babies coming along too. And a lot of them look like him and act just like him. It was just the coolest competitor you've ever wanted to see, and tried so hard. He was an amazing horse. I really had a fun time with him.
Yeah, that's a lot of fun for a trainer when you trained the whole family, the relatives. I talked to Al Stahl about that because he has several horses now that are standing at stud, including Central Banker, who was a really good freshman sire this year. But that there's something about that. It just feels like it's your grandkids or something when you put them out there.
Exactly right. And Poseidon kind of stamps them. They've actually moved to Kentucky this year, so I'm hoping we get some little better mares to them up there. And I think they will. The people at I can't think of the name of the farm he's at right now, but he's moved up there and they're doing a great job advertising him. But having them in the barn, they all have that. He stamps them out. They all have the same look on their face. A couple of them, you swear you're looking right at them. So, and they've turned out to be nice runners. So it's really, really a pleasure to bring those babies along. And I've got four or five already coming up this year. So should be an interesting year.
Butch, only a few minutes before we have to wrap up the program. And we always like to spend a couple of minutes asking trainers to tell us something about them that people may not know. So, in terms of what you enjoy doing, any other hobbies or things that you follow, other sports or anything, things you enjoy doing when you get time away from the racetrack, what might they be? Anything?
Oh, yeah. I'm a big Eagles fan, of course. We have our whole crew, all Philadelphia guys. So we love the Eagles. Hated the other night when Dallas beat the Eagles, but we'll survive that.
Tough loss.
And I'm a throwback from the 70s. 70s hippie a little bit. I still go to Grateful Dead concerts and like music, so we do go to a lot of concerts and stuff like that. So that's how I relax and kind of get away from the horses for a few minutes anyway, every once in a while. So that's one of my great my favorite pastimes. But other than that, I just love watching horse racing and sitting in the grandstand and and probably gambling too much, but that's what I enjoy. So those couple things are help me get away from the horses every now and then.
Being an Eagles fan, did you make sure you didn't have any horses entered to run on Super Bowl Sunday last year?
Oh, absolutely, yeah. We took that off and make sure everything was good. All the others were down there. So it was a great time to be in Philadelphia, I can tell you that much. We went down for the parade, and we're in town the night before, and everybody's excited. So after years of being the suffering Eagles fans, it was nice to finally be on the top side of it for a change. So,
yeah, now it's back to suffering again.
Yeah, now we're back to suffering, unfortunately. But we love them, and we're true and blue fans, so we'll stick with them through thick and thin.
How about your Maryland Terrapins? Do you follow them much?
I love the Terps, yeah. I mean, we're lucky enough to upset Texas this year. I thought the football team was going to be a little bit better, but I like college basketball, too, so I keep an eye on them, So also, yeah, we love the Terps. I mean, we're Terps fans for life, I guess.
You mentioned attending those concerts. What's the last concert that you went to, the most recent one?
Most recent one was Dead & Company in Camden, New Jersey. John Mayer playing lead for the passed away Jerry Garcia. And not quite like it was in the 70s, but it's still pretty good. So a couple of my old high school buddies still get together and go over and have a good time with it. So it's a lot of fun.
I heard John Mayer did a really good job. Did you agree with that?
Oh, yeah. It's not like it was, but it's still very good. Yeah, he's a real talent, and he seems to be enjoying himself with some of the older guys. So it was a really good show. Actually, we went to sing the other night here at Parks, where they had, I'm a Roy Orbison fan also, and they had a hologram of Roy Orbison doing all the songs, and it was really pretty amazing to watch. We had a good time with that also.
That's cool.
Yeah, really, really neat. Butch Reed Jr. here on Trainer Talk, presented by Phasic Tipton. Butch, it has been a pleasure to have you on the program and hear your story, and want to wish you all the best moving forward with Maximus Mischief and all of the horses that you're going to have here in 2019. A very happy holidays and a happy new year, my friend, and we'll look forward to seeing you when we get down to Gulfstream Park.
Well, same to you and everybody, and really thanks for having me on. Even though you haven't been able to find me for 35 years, you finally did the right thing. Came across me, and happy holidays to everybody.
Appreciate it, Butch. Yeah, the heck with that Baffert guy. We got Butch Reed Jr.
There you go.
How great was that?
Yeah, that was fun.
Yeah, sharp guy, a lot of fun, and good for him.
Yeah.
You love to see guys like this who pay their dues, who go through the lows of the sport and keep persevering. You love to see him with a big horse like Maximus Mischief.
Yeah, he knows what to do with him. Love to see him in Kentucky.
Yeah, he certainly does. Don't forget, head to our website, horseracingradio.net, to check out the podcast of this show and all of our Trainer Talk shows. And, of course, follow us on social media at HRRN on Twitter, Horse Racing Radio Network on Facebook. For our producer, Lee Delapina, for Jude Feld, and our special guest, Butch Reed Jr., I'm Mike Penna. Thanks for listening. We'll talk to you next week on Trainer Talk, presented by Phasic Tipton.